Good morning, everybody, and welcome. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are here for Turning Towards Life. One more excellent Sunday morning in our lives of kerfuffle and ordinariness. So you are very welcome here. Justin, I want to say welcome to you, welcome to me, and to say how excellent it is that our lives are punctuated by this wonderful conversation that we have every Sunday. And for me, at this stage, I kind of frantically get myself together and I sit down here and take a deep breath with a cup of tea, and I'm really glad to be here because I'm still in the newborn world with a 9-week-old baby and a 4-year-old, and when I get here it feels like I've already been in life for about 3 days by 9 o'clock. So I'm really grateful to be here. And I was talking to a friend this week about parenting things and how the most wonderful kind of parenting support is about self-care and watching out for this one so that we can be who we need to be for our children. And so, Justin, I love this way of talking about self-care that you've brought today through this source. And I'm really, really, really glad to be getting into that conversation from a place of being in where I am in my life. And obviously, more generally, when I'm not a mother of young children, there's lots more to my life too. And I feel like it's such a great conversation to be in because there's so many misconceptions about what self-care can be. And I think it includes a hell of a lot. And I'm really glad to be stepping in with you in this way.
Thanks, Lizzie. Hello. Well, it's very good for me to be here too. Was just thinking as you were saying hello that this week I was, as you'll know, Lizzie, I was running for Third Space. We did a day on this field of practice called constellations. We did a day on systemic organization constellations, and some language came to me this week that I hadn't thought of before. Because a lot of that field of practice involves thinking about how we get resourced. And I got talking to someone actually about the language of self-care after the day. And one of the things that we started to realize is that one of the troubles that many of us have with the language of self-care is it throws us quite quickly into the language of selfishness and or not. And so I really appreciated the language of resourcing that actually, how do we get resourced for all the things that we're up to in our lives, for ourselves and for everyone else that we care for. So maybe another way of thinking about this source is it's a source about resourcing, about how we resource ourselves on the inside as well as on the outside. So I'm looking forward to jumping into that. But I also want to say hello to everyone. Welcome. This is our 330th week. And something about the symmetry of those numbers, I think in 3 weeks when we get to 333, somehow it will feel significant to me. It's very wonderful to be doing this. So hello to everyone who's with us. And I know that there are people joining us because I've spoken to some of you this week for the first time. And there are people who are coming back to us after having listened and been alongside with us for a while at the beginning and then finding their way back to us. So whether you've been here all the time or a long time or just joining or maybe finding your way back into this conversation, you are all so welcome to be here. And just a reminder that you can always track back to all of the conversations we've had before at turningtowards.life, which is our website just for this project, or on any of the podcast apps. And on the turningtowards.life website, you can also find ways to support us if you'd like, which we're always very grateful for. And one of the best things about getting supported is, as well as supporting us resource-wise, people often write messages to us there about what this means to us. It's lovely to hear. And you can email us hello at turningtowards.life, all of that. And maybe you want to find your way to Third Space. We are thirdspace.org, which is the effort, the endeavor out of which this whole conversation got born. And now here's our source, always on the website and in the notes. And Lizzie, I actually found this. I'm a very active reader of, as you'll know, the author Rebecca Solnit. And this isn't by Rebecca, but she posted it a couple of weeks ago. It's actually from an organization called the School of Life, who get up to all kinds of interesting things.
Justin, can I just say something just in the intro section as well? This week I heard from somebody who has completed the professional coaching course in San Francisco, and I think there are other ways that the professional coaching course, the year-long program we run, happens in the States. I think maybe in Washington and Seattle, and I don't know other places. But just to say a welcome to particularly the Seattle alumni, because the people in Seattle are being told about this podcast this week by somebody who I know has been in, is in the alumni with them. And so I wanted to say a welcome to people who don't necessarily do third space programs, but know what the PCC is, and who have come through that, and who are listening to this as a resource, either for their clients or for their own ongoing interest in these kinds of conversations and their own development. So I just want to say a hello to anybody who maybe hasn't been directly with us in our programs, but knows what the work is that we're up to from the year-long program, and is tapping into this as a resource, as a way of resourcing themselves as well. And just to say welcome to that lot too.
Hello to all the Seattle people, yes. And everyone who studies integral coaching with New Ventures West and Convivium and the Center for Coaching in South Africa and all the places that are committed to the same body of work and the same values that Third Space is committed to. Everyone's welcome. Everyone's welcome. And there's a particular flavor of it that we have called Third Space. And it's lovely to be able to throw our arms around a worldwide community of people. And many of you who are just with us because you found your way to us and have got nothing to do with coaching or anything like that, you're really welcome here too. So here's this source. It's well observed that between the ages of around 1 and 12, many children manifest a deep attachment to a stuffed soft object, normally shaped into a bear, a rabbit, or less often a penguin. The depth of the relationship can be extraordinary. What's truly remarkable is that the animal looks after its owner, addressing him or her in a tone of unusual maturity and kindness. It might, in a crisis, urge the child not to worry and to look forward to better times in the future. But naturally, the animal's character is entirely made up. The animal is simply something invented or brought to life by one part of the child in order to look after the other. Though it sounds a little odd, speaking to ourselves is common practice throughout our lives, and often when we do so, the tone is harsh and punitive. But mental well-being depends upon having to hand a repertoire of more gentle, forgiving, and hopeful inner voices. Being properly mature demands a gracious accommodation with what can seem childlike, embarrassing, or humiliatingly vulnerable. We should honour stuffed animals for what they really are, tools to help us on our first steps in the vital business of knowing how to look after ourselves.
Looking after ourselves. It's well observed that between the ages of around 1 and 12, many children manifest a deep attachment to a stuffed, soft object, normally shaped into a bear, a rabbit, or less often, a penguin. The depth of the relationship can be extraordinary. What's truly remarkable is that the animal looks after its owner, addressing him in a tone of unusual maturity and kindness. It might, in a crisis, urge the child not to worry and look forward to better times in the future. But naturally, the animal's character is entirely made up. The animal is simply something invented or brought to life by one part of the child in order to look after the other. Though it sounds a little odd, speaking to ourselves is common practice throughout our lives. Often when we do so, the tone is harsh and punitive. But mental well-being depends on having to hand a repertoire of more gentle, forgiving, and hopeful inner voices. Being properly mature demands a gracious accommodation with what can seem childlike, embarrassing, or humiliatingly vulnerable. We should honour stuffed animals for what they really are, tools to help us on our first steps in the vital business of knowing how to look after ourselves.
If I were reading this again, I'd read it. I'd want to make a change in one of the lines, and I would read, instead of mental well-being, which I think is true, I would say living well depends upon having to hand a repertoire of more gentle, forgiving, and hopeful inner voices. A gracious accommodation with what can seem childlike, embarrassing, or humiliatingly vulnerable. I want to make the frame bigger than the author of this made it. I was really touched by a few things in reading this. I think one is remembering being little and being exactly in the state, having soft toys. And in fact, I've found one, not a childhood one. I have one here in a little up above my desk to reach for sometimes for exactly this reason, because I remember that feeling of putting my own voice in the toy and letting it speak back to me so that I could be soothed or loved or taken care of when I was feeling afraid or vulnerable or any of those kind of things. I really remember that feeling. And then I remembered, Lizzie, how easy it is to set that aside and for these other voices that the author here talks about to come forward, and that there's a way in which I think it might be a sort of cultural thing to do with the wider culture that many of us swim in, is that which voices get legitimized and for who, that the harsh critical voices somehow seem to be the ones that we start to give credence to, like they're the real ones. Mm. And these tender inner ones are somehow not important, or to be marginalized, or to be discredited, or somehow it's childish, you know, sort of somehow each of us ought to toughen up in a way and only listen to those harsh voices that are going to push us on. So I remember that feeling. But then actually I've been looking, I think one of the reasons this stepped out to me is that I've been looking in myself over recent months and spotting how easy it is for me, how when something happens in my life or I'm in a particular circumstance, there are really genuinely often many voices within. There are so many parts of me that have so many different takes on what's happening. And I've started to notice that I really do have habits about which voices I'll prioritize and give the center to, and which ones get marginalized. And there are really strong patterns in it, particularly if I'm not paying very much attention. And very often the ones that get given a voice in me often are the critical ones, or they're the sad ones, or they're the ones that will treat something that I had previously, that I had longed for, as something that I'm not welcome to. It doesn't matter what the pattern is. The point is, there are so many inside me. And so this invitation from this writing here to notice that there are many, many different aspects of us, and to be really intentional about what of us we're willing to give a place to, who inside us we're willing to listen to and give a place to, and how we can give a place to the ones that we ordinarily marginalize. And that's starting to see that who gets marginalized inside us is actually something to do with me. You know, I think that's the thing I've been looking at fresh. Oh, when I feel a deep sorrow right in the middle of something joyful, that's quite a common pattern for me, is to go, okay, it's true, there's something sad in here, but what am I doing with the joyfulness? You know, where am I, what credence am I given to that in me which is just delighting? So that's my pattern, by the way, is to not so much give a place to the ones who are delighted inside me, but to give quite a lot of place to the ones who are sorrowful inside me. Mm. And the route back into having a sort of different kind of accommodation with what's inside me that comes from remembering childhood is really helpful, actually, because I'm able to find my way back into a time when I think I had less automatic judgment about the different parts in me. I remember the feeling of all these different aspects of me having more easy space. And so that's what I've been practicing over the last few weeks. And it turns out it makes an enormous difference. I actually can, the self that I am, the something that I am that isn't really any of the parts themselves, can actually play an enormous role in welcoming a different kind of pattern of community inside me. And then it ripples out everywhere. you know, what I can say, who I can speak to, what I can get up to, how I experience it, what seems possible. So it feels like a really important conversation to me.
So moved, Justin, by lots of different things at once. I feel like in the moments when you're speaking here, I'm no different to Andy walking in the field with his dog in receipt of Justin's words and heart and perception of life and depth and all the things. And then I get to be in the luxurious position of having my response, partly anyway, verbalized back to you. And I'm just honoring what this is in the world, which is a kind of, when we say things, it brings alive things in each of our bodies and imaginations and lives in different ways. And it's really powerful. So I'm just in receipt of receiving, you know, in receiving that from you now, I can feel all these pieces of me waking up to say things and to tell you what my experience is and all of that. And I want to honor that that's happening to everyone who's listening too. And I'm feeling very grateful to be sitting here and have a chance to respond and tell you very probably a small part of what I'm experiencing and listening to you. And so one of the things to say is, as you talk, pieces of me awaken, awareness in my system awakens to things that I haven't been thinking about and I haven't been considering until the moment you say them. So I want to say thank you for saying the things that you say so that I can be awakened. That's how I'm feeling in this moment. And the awakening that's happening in me, first of all, is an amazement that as little children, we know that we need something which is a softer, gentler, more forgiving voice. And so we make something that is that. And how incredible that as beings, we have a sense of what we need and then we make it, even when we don't really know what we're doing. It's just innate in us. And I am one of these children who had I didn't have a soft toy. I had some flannels. They weren't even a toy. They didn't even have a face. My flannels. And they were my deep, deep comfort in the world. And so my parents, like any parents who have a child who has a soft toy or a thing, were constantly asked, where are my flannels? Where are my flannels? Or if we left my flannels anywhere, you know, we would be in this situation. They were so precious to me. And I get curious about how come I needed to create that too in my childhood. There are children who didn't have that like I had it. And I'm very curious as to what had me really need that and feel so attached to them for many years until they were so ragged and so soft that they were threadbare. And I think some of them disintegrated even. So I really needed them. They were a big part of my life. So reading this is also really moving and hearing this interpretation of that and your understanding and your reflection on it is really bringing up a lot for me. And I'm really appreciating that. I'm also really moved by this line. It's simply something invented or brought to life by one part of the child in order to look after the other part of the child. And what a wise part that creates this. What a wise part that was always there, that made this up in order to serve the other parts that needed reassurance and comfort. And for me, it was a physical thing too. So to have my flannels like on my face, on my neck, on my skin, gave me some physical comfort that I really, really needed. So for me, it wasn't so much that I can remember now anyway, like voices or being talked to, it was more being comforted and physically soothed. And I'm really feeling grateful that those flannels were there. They were from Mothercare, I remember, the little label, the little soft label on them. And they had a beach ball and a bear and a pram of some kind, I think, on it. I'm also really, really moved, Justin, by our relationship to what we might call like our essential self, and how that comes forth through these. It's us. It's not something else. We're making it something else by having an object that we can employ to do that job, but it's not us. It is us. So I'm feeling really, how am I feeling? Really held by the always there-ness of essential self for all of us, that whatever state we get ourselves into and however difficult things are, it really matters that that kind and forgiving and gentle voice is present in our lives. And when you were talking about the preferences that you have in your system for giving more space to sorrow than joy, for example, I also got something in me really moved when you said that, because I think I'm the opposite. And I think that's where partly the beauty of this conversation comes from, which is, I know my developmental journey is one where there has been historically so much positivity and joy and like socially acceptable exuberance that is a gift I have. I know that. But it's also, if that comes at a cost to all the other parts of me, I know that there needs to be some building of my awareness as to what's stopping me from allowing the parts of me to come forth that are sorrow filled or grief filled or traumatized or whatever. And that I can use my, and I guess you can say positive parts, you know, my upbeat, capable, straightforward parts to kind of smother those so that I don't have to endure the pain that they would bring if I allowed them forth. So for some of us, pain is like a comfortable place to be, a familiar place to be. But for me, it's like I'll do anything to avoid it kind of thing. So I know in my journey, I've had to really understand the dynamic there. And also, I don't know whether it comes with that or maybe it's a general thing, but having a voice that says, when I'm being forgiving and gentle and kind, a voice that comes up when that gentleness arises in me that says, well, that's crazy. You can't rely on gentleness and kindness. Something has to be done here, something more concrete, something different than kindness has to be here. And so I also know that there's this kind of complex layered dialogue going on with when I try and cultivate a forgiving and kind voice, there are other things that come in to push that away, which I think are those kind of cynical, more worldly voices that are my wider conditioning happening. That's a different conditioning than probably from my family, and partly from my family, but that I can feel the world existing in me in all of its cynicism and all of its pushing away of kindness and forgiveness, because where does forgiveness get you in the end kind of thing. So I feel like when you were speaking, it arose to me that it's quite a complex thing happening of, oh, okay, well, I could cultivate a more kind voice in relationship to my financial worries or my relationship issues or my inner self-flagellation or something. And then another set of voices comes in that says, well, that's not going to get you anywhere. And so it's quite a kind of complex little cauldron of mess. And so this work, Justin, of distinguishing out the different parts and being and taking it really slowly to identify them and give each of them time rather than it feeling like this big, oh gosh, this is really complicated. And I think that's when my positive parts might come online, just go, oh God, that's all too much. I'm just going to have a party kind of thing. So I feel really glad that we can do that, and we do that together, and that we can let one another and encourage one another and facilitate one another in finding these distinct parts that need space and time, because they are all jumbled up inside this one, and this one isn't particularly organized inside, I can tell you. is pretty disorganized. So to find time and space and spaciousness and relationship where we get to lay it out on the table and be helped to give each one space and time feels really sacred in this moment to me.
It's really striking me as you're talking that it's so helpful for us to know ourselves as many on the inside. It's got so much explanatory power for the bewilderment we can sometimes feel. You know, I think there's a story about being... I've just been really reading a really excellent, interesting book, which I'm trying to find a source to bring to Tony Tor's life at some point, called The Courage to Be Happy. What's interesting about the book is excellent as it is and really thought-provoking as it is, it never allows for the possibility that there's more than one of us inside here. So it talks in language about, you know, if you're an adult, you'll be able to be mature is to be able to choose X, Y, or Z instead of A, B, and C. That's that kind of language. And it's very helpful. You know, I've been reading it and going, yeah, I can see all the ways in which I could do with actually actively choosing A, B, and C and not X, Y, and Z. And that's, and I think what language that doesn't address this complexity we have inside fails to do is to help us to really see the source of how confounding we can be to ourselves.
You
know, how is it that even though I wish for this happens inside me? And when we've got language for this complexity on the inside, instead of disempowering us to go, well, I'm just a mess on the inside, like we all are in so many ways, so complex, I actually think it gives us a new kind of possibility, which is exactly the one that we're talking about, which is, okay, so there's this enormous complex, messy complexity inside me. I often don't know what's going to arise. I'm not in charge of what arises inside me, but, and there is something inside me that we've been calling in this conversation or something more essential about us, something more quieter and more spacious and more timeless in us that's not any of these parts that we can draw on, that can help us, that of us can discern between this and this and can attend to this or that, can be in relationship with this complexity inside us in a way that can help to steer us through or guide us through. And then we really do have choices about what we attend to and what we don't, what we love and what we listen to, which voices will take us the straightforward truth and which voices we can ask a question about. But also we can start to watch inside us that there are some parts of us that try to dominate other parts. So I think that the dynamic in us that for some of us, that like for me, the joy, the ones in me that would go towards joy often get quite dominated by the other parts that go, joy is dangerous, joy is not work, joy will lead to trouble, bring on the sad parts. That's the sort of the dance inside me. It turns out that once I know that, just like when we're little and we give a voice to a soft toy and it can say back to us the thing that we need to hear, there is something really important in me that can play a role with all of these parts and sort of go, hello, everybody, let's try a different way with this. You over here, let's give you a bit more space. And you, these ones who are frightened of joy, I can take care of you. I understand your fear. I really get why you're frightened, or even just that you're frightened. But let's see if we can make it possible for you to feel a little bit safer and to relax a little bit so that these ones have a chance, that we can start to play that role inside our own systems. And for me, it's really been a few weeks that I've been really seeing this in a new way. It's like being the image that I'm thinking about is being the conductor of an orchestra. You know, the job of the conductor is to make sure that something doesn't dominate a set of instruments, occupies its rightful place in the midst and brings on these ones and quietens down these ones. And that's what I've been doing inside. And it's opening up an enormous, enormous more space for joyfulness. And the sorrow that's so familiar to me isn't getting squished or trampled on or something. It's just being honored and staying at while something else is being given its place that is very, very nourishing and resourcing inside my system. And it's I think it's such a hopeful stance to see that we can do that. The diminishing stance would be to say, well, we're just complex and we just have to live with, yeah and no. Like, actually, there's really, really a lot that we can do, and it's a proper kind of maturity. I'm just going back to this source. It's a proper kind of maturity for us to not to treat everything inside us with cynicism, but to meet it and welcome it and learn how to welcome and support each of these different parts of us in themselves being nourished so that they can bring their goodness forward and not be caught in interminable wrangles. Maybe it would be very good for us to watch small children play with their flannels or their soft toys and see how that happens, because maybe we've just forgotten.
Mm. Justin, as you're talking, you know, you and I both know that we have this language of breathing yourself a little bit bigger. Where we stop and see whether we can breathe our sense of ourselves to be a little bit more spacious, a little bit more big than the contraction that can sometimes happen. And I've been doing that ever since this little baby in our family has been born, because of course there's two beings now competing for my attention. And I'm realizing that my normal technique of honing in on one thing and doing it well doesn't really work anymore in those moments, because there's too many things going on for my system to handle them. So to your point of, yes, there's things that we can do, I'm certainly practicing like mad, trying to, in the moments when I'm drawn on in too many directions for my nervous system to tolerate, I'm really saying to myself, can I breathe myself a little bit bigger so that I can be spacious enough for these two very big competing commitments that I have to be wrangling with me and each other, in order that I'm not completely frazzled and not a person that I want to be. And of course, there's lots of moments where I'm a person I don't want to be, like spun out and worried and panicky and not able to handle what's going on. But in those moments, I know I've got something that I can do that's a more mature response than just freaking out, basically. And so I'm really grateful for you saying one way of talking is, oh, well, we just have to live with it. But another way is, no, I can have the capacity to breathe myself a little bit bigger so that what's happening has a place here. And I'm not completely sucked in, but I'm a big enough space to hold what's arising and to see new things and to be in it in just as an intimate, messy kind of way, but with a presence and an awareness that's much bigger than what the circumstance is habitually calling me to become, which is narrow and contracted and freaking out in some way. So I'm practicing that a lot, especially in the middle of the night when both children wake up at the same time and are unwell or whatever's happening. I feel like, can I breathe myself a bit bigger in order to be able to hold what's happening with some presence and spaciousness? And the answer so far has been, even if it's a tiny bit, yes. And that's really all I need, is a tiny bit. It's not that big a leap. It's just a thought and an idea that can come in that then translates into my breath and my body. And then it's not so ravaging to be in the moment of difficulty anymore.
There's a fantastic place for us to end for today, Lizzie, with a reminder, this reminder from you that in many, many, many situations, we may be able to only breathe ourselves a little bit bigger, but we can very often breathe ourselves a bit bigger, and that breath, that expansion in our capacity to hold all of the complexity and respond to it, is needed not just when you're a mother of two little ones up in the middle of the night, but it's needed with our adult families and our communities and our workplaces and our politics and our being in the shops with other people and when we're traveling on the bus, and everything that we're up to can really be infused with the capacity that we have for attending to and bringing out in ourselves and other people that which is properly life-giving and wise and responsive and all of that. That's a great reminder. Thank you, as always, for being in this conversation. It's a great, great honor to keep on discovering and learning with you. One of the wonderful things about this whole project is how little we know before we open our mouths what it is that we're going to discover in ourselves and from one another as we go. So thank you, Lizzie, to you for participating in the way that you do. It's a great joy. And thank you, everyone, for being with us. We would love to hear from you, and we'd love to read what you have to say if you decide to support us, or maybe even just leave a review if you're a podcast listener on Apple Podcasts or something. That's always a wonderful way. Also, that our work finds its way into the hands of others, and we, all being well, will be back same time, same place next week.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Justin.
Bye, everyone.